Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. My name is Jay Moran. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about a long-standing institution here in our region, Catholic Charities of Western New York. Deacon Steve Schumer is the president and CEO. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
And Molly Ann Oliver is the chief operating officer. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jay.
Let's start off with need. Need in Western New York. Give us an idea of where we are right now and how it may be changing.
Well, the need in our community continues to grow, continues to increase. For a variety of reasons, economic uncertainty, layoffs, rising prices, families' budgets are increasingly stressed. And so the need continues to grow. And I really can't think of a time in my lifetime when the need hasn't increased year over year. But particularly now, we're seeing increased numbers of people coming into our offices across the variety of services seeking some form of help.
I'm interested to hear this, and I'll just to maybe expand on that a little bit. And this
sure
is less about Catholic Charities, but just that idea of need. You know, from my little perspective of the world that I get, I sense the same thing that you just said, mm-hmm, that it does seem to be growing. What can we attribute that to? I mean, it's on one side, it seems that we're a richer society in a lot of ways. There's mm-hmm a lot of wealth, but yet the need seems to only grow, at least here in Western New York. What do you make of that?
Well, Jay, I think about the needs on a variety of fronts, right? Human people have all sorts of needs. We need shelter. We need clothing. We need a place to sleep. We also need love and acceptance. We also need spiritual balance. We also need mental health. On all of those fronts, again, you know, I'm Catholic clergy, so I look at it from this perspective. There's a lot of need, and sometimes the spiritual and the behavioral needs of an affluent society, they can run counter to the level of affluence. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you might have money to pay the bills, but you're unhappy, you know, or you're spiritually unsettled. But more temporally, Catholic Charities is kind of in the business of addressing mostly the physical needs that people have, as well as the behavioral needs, and those are the places where it's manifested. It's most obvious. You know, if you're unhoused or you're food insecure, or you're troubled, you know, by behavioral or mental health issues, those are places where it's difficult to overcome without some form of assistance. And that's really where Catholic Charity steps in. It's the corporal works of mercy, as it was.
Mm. And mental health, you brought that up, and again, let's maybe expand on that, because that
sure
seems to be something that is also on the rise as well. Again, that's just one person's, you know, perspective. But what about that? What are we seeing within Catholic Charities, and what types of needs that you're hearing about?
An incredible amount of need. Molly, as chief operating officer, has responsibility for all of the services we provide, including our behavioral health services. Those have been labeled as the Monsignor Carr Institute for decades. People might know us that
mm-hmm
way. We started to put the Catholic Charity sign on the wall so people realize that they're both us.
Right.
Monsignor Carr was our first diocesan director when we were founded 100 years ago. So in the 50s, when they started the institute, they said, let's name it after your Monsignor car.
Okay.
But Business First ranks us as the fifth largest provider of mental health in Western New York. I'll let Molly talk a little bit about the locations and the number of people we serve and, you know, how that's continuing to increase.
Oh, yeah. We have five locations and located in the city, Niagara Falls, Cheektowaga. And right now we're going through renovation of two of those sites. Pretty exciting for the agency to be able to renovate to our spaces so we can accommodate more clients. But we are also adapting our model to the changing needs of our community. There's more demand for mental health in schools. People are requiring mental health support in their families, people who've been victims of domestic violence, for example. And so we're really trying to make sure we have the capacity to serve all the people who need us.
It's interesting to hear that you're adapting to the changing needs. What again, let's maybe explore what that might look like. What are we talking about here?
I think our society has learned through pandemic to be more open and accepting of behavioral health as something that we need to pay attention to. Reducing the stigma affiliated with behavioral health has become a big push, and you see that on lots of fronts. And we're part of that, especially with youth and with families. So many of our services, you know, Molly mentioned our Monsignor Carr Institute, where we actually have clinical treatment for youth and adults who have a mental health diagnosis. But so many of our other services touch on behavioral health. Therapy for a troubled teenager who's cutting class and acting up at home, and you know, mom and dad are having difficulty in keeping them on the right path. You know, deterring them from ending up in the juvenile justice system. That's a behavioral health issue, right? This is how the society is evolving, and we see that sometimes these behaviors manifest themselves in the inability to hold down a job or bring in an income or stay, you know, housed or be able to put food on the table. All these things are connected. So many of us who have resources have the ability to recover when something goes bump in our lives,
right.
Because we have a support network. We may have savings in the bank. We may have a stable job. We may have family around us who can support us. People who have challenges, who don't have those supports, all it takes is one thing in your life to go wrong, and you might not have the ability to recover. And that's where Catholic Charities comes in quite often. We often find people who, you know, a person may walk into the food pantry and need to have assistance with food, but that's related to the fact that they also have something else going on in their lives. And that's what we try to do is to assess the whole person and find out, well, here's food for today, but how can we help you get to a place in your life where we can transform your life experience into something that's stable, safe, secure? You know, how do we provide hope for tomorrow in addition to just, you know, what you need today?
Let's talk about how individuals come across Catholic Charities. What's sure. the number? 147,000 individuals were touched by Catholic Charities in some form or another, served by Catholic Charities by someone. That's an incredible number
right.
when you reflect upon it on the eight counties here in Western New York. So how does somebody come across Catholic Charities? How does that happen? I mean, I guess there's a lot of different entry points. And we were talking about before we went on the air, about the office that a lot of us here in downtown Buffalo know over on Washington Street. You say maybe 30 to 40 people walk in there every day looking for some sort of help.
Yeah. I mean, 147,000, that's about 10% of the population when you look at that. Washington Street, for those people who live and work downtown, they recognize that location because we've been in that building since the 50s. We have a photograph on the wall. It used to be a department store called Norbin's back in. that's a common place. But for example, we also we are the administrator of WIC for three counties in Western New York. How many WIC offices? I'm giving Molly a quiz.
I think it's eight right now.
Okay.
Right?
There's a lot of people, and through pandemic.
So that's something somebody would apply through
would
the
apply
state and then end up working through one of your offices.
So a family who receives SNAP assistance is always eligible for WIC as well.
Okay.
And so it's a really easy program, and I think we've got something like 20,000 families. The program was started. It's a federal program administered at the state level. Women, infants, and children is WIC. Essentially, it's education on nutrition for moms and families. We have dads as well, of course, but basically it's formula, it's information about breastfeeding and nutrition. Very, very popular program. That often is an entry point because a family might have other needs that we discover in working with them. Same thing in the food pantries. Someone comes to us in a food pantry and we talk to them and we discover, well, what else is going on in your life? Likewise, in behavioral health, someone might come to us, you know, with anxiety, with depression. They're having difficulty coping, and these are some common entry points.
Yeah, let's talk about the food pantries a little bit because, again, this is something that seems to only expand. Six in Erie County, if I'm not mistaken, and a couple outside the county, Wellsville, Franklinville as well. What's driving the expansion of this? And I mean, how often are they being utilized? What's going on?
Molly, you want to talk a little bit about the food pantries?
Oh, sure. We actually had 9 food pantries, one in the Getzville area in Town Square that has recently closed, and we're looking for a more innovative way to support the needs of that community. But you know, those food pantries see so many people every day from all walks of life. And if you ever have an opportunity to really see Catholic Charities from the inside, I suggest coming in as a volunteer in those pantries. It's really moving, not just the work of our staff, but the work of our volunteers to serve the needs of the community. And then through those programs, our staff can also refer the clients of the pantries to other areas. I mean, food insecurity is one of the greatest needs in our community, something so basic like that.
Right. And what, there's one in Lovejoy? Is that, do I have that right?
Yes.
And one in Lovejoy?
Yeah, yeah.
And one on Rich Street, is that's just off of Genesee?
Yeah,
is that the one as well?
Yeah. That's used to be the, I believe it was Our Lady Queen of Sorrows Parish. The church building is the King Urban Life Center.
Right.
The rectory and the convent are Catholic Charities services, and that's also where we're renovating the mental health clinic. We're very proud of that because it's in the heart of the East Side, just a few blocks from the Tops where we had the terrible tragedy, and we've been in that neighborhood since the 90s, and it's one of our flagship locations. The pantries are great, to your question about the pantries. Mm-hmm. We have a skeleton staff of employees. On any given day, when a pantry is open for distribution, usually a couple days every week as a regular schedule, there's 2 employees and like 8 or 10 volunteers.
Mm.
The volunteers, you know, the truck comes in, someone has to get all that food off the truck, get it organized, you know, help people come through, get checked in, you know, get their cart and get their stuff. And it's wonderful because, as Molly pointed out, you know, the folks in line, some of them are employed, some of them aren't employed, some of them are young, some of them are old, sometimes there's families. This is a wonderful cross-section of the community. And there's a spirit of joy and community that occurs on days when people come in, because these are the same folks who come in every month for, you know, for the distribution, and you get to know people.
Right.
You know, and quite often we'll have a table set up with extra goodies that we've received from one of the grocery stores, or sometimes there's clothing items, and sometimes there's personal care items, sometimes there's winter gloves and boots, and so it's just lovely. Anyone looking to volunteer should absolutely give us a call.
I think what struck me most when I joined Catholic Charities 2 years ago is the tenure of the staff in the pantries, 25, 30 years, and there's no place they'd rather be.
Really?
They know the community, and they love what they do, and that, you know, is really moving.
Yeah. Feed More is our partner for the food. You know, we're there are many, many pantries all across Western New York. Most often an organization like a church or a community group will have one pantry, maybe two, that they operate. We're a little unusual because we've got 8 pantries that are under the Feed More umbrella. So it's a really great partnership. We're so grateful to our colleagues at Feed More for what they do for us.
Yeah, and Wegmans, too, for all of the other additional items that they're able to provide. Yep. Our clients.
We're talking this morning with two folks from the Catholic Charities of Western New York. Deacon Steve Schumer is the president and CEO, and Damali Ann Oliver is chief operating officer. You know, I want to stay with the food pantry structure for just a little bit. And also how Catholic Charities is funded overall. So take me into that a little bit. The idea that, okay, you know, there's the appeal. The appeal's looking for X amount of money. But obviously, you know, you're not going out and buying groceries with the Catholic Charities appeal, right? Yeah.
That's a good question. It was something that I was surprised to learn when I first joined. The food itself comes from Feed More, and the it's pennies on the dollar. Right. So most of that food is not where we spend the money. Our funds are needed to rent the space, to pay for the heat, the lights, the insurance, and a couple of employees. But still, when you're running, you know, nine locations across the whole footprint, it's a significant use for the appeal dollars.
Right.
Any listeners who are in a parish running one particular food pantry can appreciate this. If you didn't have the parish hall for the, you know, for the space, you'd have to go out and rent space, and that's essentially what we have, right? So we rely on donor dollars to keep that going. The way Catholic Charities is funded is the appeal is really, really critical because quite often we will do work under contract or under grant, quite often through a county government, sometimes through a state government, sometimes through a federal government. And what that really means in practical terms is you get the contract to do the work, and you present a voucher to the funder to say, okay, here's the people we've served under this contract, and then they pay you back. Well, weeks and months go by between the time when you employ a person and rent the space and provide the service and you actually get paid. And so that presents, quite frankly, a cash flow problem.
Mm.
And so Catholic Charities has the economies of scale, and using money from the appeal, we're able to make payroll, you know, pay for the insurance and the heat and the lights and the rent and all that to keep the entity rolling while we wait to be reimbursed, you know, by funders. And the appeal specifically supports food pantries in a big way, mental health. So most of the folks who come see us have public insurance, Medicaid, Medicare. And anybody who's in the medical profession will tell you that the cost of providing a medical appointment, whether it's orthopedics or general practice or, in our case, behavioral health, the cost of providing that service is not covered, you know, by the Medicaid reimbursement rates.
Mm.
And so we have to subsidize those clinics with donor dollars to be able to provide that service. Because the folks we're serving generally don't have private pay insurance or certainly the ability to pay out of pocket. And so, as I mentioned, Business First ranks us as one of the larger providers. We have, I think it's 3,500 people who rely on Catholic Health mental health services for their ongoing care. Certainly, people come to us. They're healed. They're treated. They're discharged from service. But there's a number of folks who are, you know, chronically ill with a mental health diagnosis who rely on us, and specifically in the East Side neighborhood where one of our largest clinics is located, those folks, you know, they don't have the ability to travel out to the burbs for care. So that's why it's so important for us to be able to maintain those locations, and we rely on the appeal to make that goal. And then the last place we use the appeal in a really big way is to fund our district offices. You know, we have offices all across Western New York, you know, Perry and Warsaw and Batavia and Niagara Falls, Dunkirk, Jamestown, Wellsville, Franklinville, downtown Buffalo. We're spread out all over where people walk in saying, gee, I need help. I just need $50 for groceries today, or I need help making the rent this week, or I just lost my job, or I'm having difficulty with depression or anxiety. How can I get some help? Once again, we're renting a storefront. We're paying employees to be there to take those calls. Quite often, we'll give them a gift card to a local grocery store. Sometimes we'll give them some food that we actually have on hand. Here's some mac and cheese to get you through the day. Quite often, it's clean socks. It's a hat. It's, you know, all that stuff. And this is how these offices work. And you know, quite often what we're doing is one of our social workers is on site who's very connected to the local community, who says, look, I know this agency down the street can help you with this particular need, or you know, oh, you're a veteran, you qualify for these services. Here, let me introduce you to the person who does that. Just understanding the network of social services and being able to connect people is one of the big things that Catholic Charities is able to do. As we don't profess to be able to do everything, but if we can't do it, we know who can, right. and we can connect people with those services.
Yeah, not to necessarily put you on the spot, but I couldn't help but think about this. As you were talking about cash flow scenarios, which are real for trying to run your agency, any issue with in recent times? We've heard about federal pausing and freezing. Have you had impacted your agency?
And it's cutting across the entire not-for-profit sector. One of the programs Catholic Charities has provided for decades is refugee resettlement, which comes through the State Department. This was quite publicly terminated. Rather abruptly in February. So that particular program where we would welcome people through the refugee resettlement program, that's been terminated. So we're no longer receiving refugees. I think last year we received 250 people. As the years have gone by, this program has been up and down depending on what's going on in Washington. Mm-hmm. But right now, that particular program is no longer funded and therefore no longer active. But we have other funding sources and other services we provide, you know, to people newly arrived in the country. And these are folks, just again to define, they're here legally. They applied for refugee status and they're
which is a lengthy process.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It usually takes place in a refugee camp and a continent somewhere else.
But there's so many people. You may recall that the population of Western New York actually increased in the last census specifically due to immigration. Right, and anywhere you go, there are people as have become part of our community, you know, raising families, opening businesses, you know, contributing in so many ways. And we're really proud to be able to provide services, and as well as to people native born. So our immigration support services continue, even though we're not welcoming new refugees. There's a lot of other services we provide, and everything we've mentioned is available to everybody in the community. You know, old, young, veterans, folks who never served, folks born someplace else. We don't ask for country of origin. We don't ask about, you know, faith tradition. You know, we just serve you. You're in front of us. You need help. Here we are.
Right, right. I'm just curious also, how is some of that rhetoric, is it impacting your staff? Does it play into their minds a little bit? We've had a couple of conversations here recently. People telling us, you know, what they're seeing with younger people, that this is not having a good impact on their overall optimistic or lack thereof outlook.
It's difficult. I mean, the people who come work for Catholic Charities are doing it because they've chosen the helping profession. A lot of these folks have gone to school for social work, and that's their chosen field. A lot of folks are just, you know, looking for something, some way to give back. Yes, it can be disheartening when you feel that the work that you dedicate your life to is becoming unpopular.
And if I may add, they're there to make a difference. And even in the difficult and uncertain times we're living in, what I've noticed with our staff is that they've really pulled together. I mean, they've created some really strong teams and, just enjoy so much what they're doing that they're able to overcome some of the negativity. They care so deeply about the clients they serve.
That's got to be, I think, in your position, that's got to be very gratifying.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not for everybody, every work we do.
We get to see the real people. Yeah. We get to see the human face that goes along with. And it's not just rhetoric. It's not just numbers. It's actually seeing the real people. And that's important. And we have, I'm thinking in particular, the people who are in leadership roles in the agency who help to sort of generate that esprit de corps, keep people motivated, keep people, you know, positive and upbeat. You know, we're We're doing really, really important work. We did, you know, unfortunately, because of funding cuts, the people employed directly in refugee resettlement, once they finished settling the people who had we had already received,
sure.
we did have to lay off six people because we didn't have funding to keep those folks. And that was true for the other three refugee resettlement agencies in Western New York,
certainly.
All similar. It's just an unfortunate outcome of a changing funding landscape.
Right. Today we're talking about Catholic Charities of Western New York. With us, the president and CEO, Deacon Steve Schumer, and Molly Ann Oliver, chief operating officer. There's a lot to Catholic Charities. We mentioned the number, 147,000 people served by Catholic Charities of Western New York in the eight counties last year. Transformative housing is one of the services provided by Catholic Charities. Tell me about transformative housing.
Yes, we have two innovative housing projects that opened in the last year that are part of ESHI, which is Empire State Supportive Housing Initiative. And it's housing for adults 55 and over who are currently homeless. They have an opportunity for a permanent housing situation, a new apartment, fully furnished, so that we can provide stability to them. We have 49 apartments at Knowles Court here on 99 Best Street in Buffalo,
okay.
and 21 at Angela's House, which is on Dote Street in Cheektowaga. So people who were homeless before they came to us receive case management. And that type of supportive environment helps them get to their medical appointments, provide mental health, socialization, community, belonging, all things that we know are going to help provide stability and longevity in their lives.
Now I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you filled those spots up very quickly.
We have a waiting list, but the people who are there are very happy to
right.
be there. And then they do, you know, they do turn over, circumstances change. So.
Right, right. So that's the concept is, like you said, to help kind of stabilize the situation and see where it can go from there, and then hopefully more spaces will open up for others,
and,
right?
And, you know, what amazed me about this project is how beautiful the apartments are, and they're fully furnished, so they have everything they need for a new start. And so people who are in this program, I mean, they walk around, they can't believe it.
Right.
It's been so awe-inspiring to see. I think of one client I had the opportunity to know. He was caring for an elderly mom who had a disease, and he had to give up his work in order to care for her, and in the process lost everything, found himself homeless. And, you know, this has been able to provide him some stability, and he's been able to go back to work. And, you know, it may only be temporary for him, but it was there when he needed it.
I'm curious, and both of you can comment on this if you'd like, but just you telling that story right there, you know, of a man who's taking care of his mother and basically had to, you know, it became a full-time, more than a full-time job. And, you know, I think a lot of us can relate to that. That type of story, is that the undertold story that comes out when it comes to people who get served? That, you know, there is a stigma put on people who seek services, who need services, but the reality is it's more common than most people understand.
I think that's especially true. There's a stigma around mental health. There's a stigma around coming to a food pantry. There's a stigma around homelessness. And when you understand the causes, as I mentioned earlier, if you don't have the support network or the resources to fall back on when something, as Molly mentioned, like job loss, people end up in situations that none of us ever dreamed about. And many of us are a couple of paychecks away from serious financial
right.
hardship. You know, I think about specifically in housing, the folks who end up in this situation. It's so scary. The price of rent continues to go up and up and up, and you throw into that the price of, you know, your insurance and your food and so on and so forth. The diapers. If a young family, just diapers and wipes, and we have folks who we help out with things like that, and you don't think about it so much, like, oh, it's a bag of diapers. Well, hey, that's a big hole in the family budget, and if you can help somebody out with a bag of diapers, you get them through a tough week.
You know, it's interesting what you mentioned about rent. We're going to be doing a story, a show later this week about affordable housing here in Western New York and the price of rent. I can't come up with a figure in my mind, but the average rent in Buffalo, the way it has skyrocketed in just over the last few years is tremendous. And again, one of those things that's not necessarily well understood for sure here in Western New York. We also want to hear a little bit more. We talked about refugee resettlement, and we also talked about the expansion of your behavioral health programs. 1115 waiver. I see this on here. I want to know exactly what are we talking about with 1115 waiver. And as you point over to Molly, it's,
yeah, I'm going
to
let Molly take this.
Her wheelhouse for this.
Oh, sure. It's part of the New York Health Equity Reform, and it links individuals and families with resources to help address some of the social factors that impact them, like housing, employment, food, transportation. The idea is to address some of the underlying causes of health equities. So for us at Catholic Charities, it helps us do what we do best, help connect them to the resources to stabilize their lives. We believe that 1115 waiver is going to be really instrumental in providing some sustainability in our district offices, you know, as we may face funding shortages or declining appeal dollars, that we're able to leverage the 1115 waiver to provide some reimbursement for the screenings that we do in those offices. So we're ready. We're an early adopter of this. Many organizations in Western New York are able to take advantage of this opportunity. But, you know, it's the role is to help us identify some of the unmet needs of our clients.
Unmet needs. That's probably a big can of worms to get into here. But what about that? I mean, that it does seem to be the one thing, as I've been fortunate enough to now talk with Catholic Charities and other groups in Western New York who are boots on the ground. They're doing work and trying to help people out. It is amazing, you know, that you would think that this would all be easily understood and easily identified, but it's not like that at all.
No, it's very, very intricate. And, you know, to take off on what Molly is talking about, the 1115 waiver, it's jargon. I like to think of it in plain English. Medicaid pays when a person goes to the emergency department because they're sick. It might be the diabetes. It might just be a cold, you know, but they're there because that's their only source of medical care. But they're there because of a mental health condition or because they're unhoused or because their diet's not healthy, right? So if we can help to address those underlying causes for what lands a person in the emergency department, it's better for the person because now they're not in the emergency department.
Right.
It's also better for Medicaid because that's the most expensive form of treatment in the medical system, right? So those unmet needs, they all come together to really form how do we care for our neighbors in so many ways. Catholic Charities, 57 programs is the last count.
57?
Yeah, don't ask me to name them because so I can't. But we're delivering these all over Western New York, and they're covering all these kinds of unmet needs, right? From food to education to basic needs to, you know, to housing. We've talked about a lot of them, but they all are geared towards trying to help people improve their lives. And so we end up calling ourselves a very comprehensive social services provider, where a lot of agencies focus on one or two or three services. 57 is a lot.
Sure.
Any given
says
day.
Says the president and CEO, yes,
oh,
right?
Oh, my goodness.
The chief operating officer.
I'll look at the email when I get back to the office, and there'll be something about immigration. There'll be something about workforce education. There'll be something about food pantry, something about behavioral health. So, you know, you're all over the map in any given day.
Right, right.
Yeah, but they all fit together, and, you know, as I said, in my short time with Catholic Charities, it's so wonderful to see how they complement each other. So we're working with the refugee community. You know, they may need clothes. They may need food. They might need nutritional assistance because they're having a baby. And we have all of that, and we can seamlessly connect people to what they need.
That's most certainly encouraging to hear. I'm also struck about the outreach into the Allegheny County, Cattaraugus County. As a matter of fact, over the weekend, I took a little trip down to Allegheny County, and you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful county, and B, there's some different pockets of old housing stock that is is decrepit. And you start to see and understand that some of the rural counties, and I believe Allegheny County is the poorest county in New York State.
It is.
What about, is it different? Is it different trying to implement and help out in Allegheny County as compared to Erie County, Niagara County?
It is. And I'm glad you mentioned Allegheny County. As an interesting aside, our previous board chair, her name was Patricia Fogarty. She served as board chair. She was the assistant public defender in Allegheny County, and a staunch supporter of Catholic Charities. Pat sadly became ill and died last year, and today would have been Pat's birthday.
Oh, geez.
So talking about Allegheny County is important. And yes, it is difficult to serve there, but Pat was always a fierce advocate because as public defender, many of the folks that Pat would see in her office would also be in need of services, right? These things all go together. And
right.
Sometimes an intersection with the legal system is an unfortunate outcome of a person's economic or behavioral situation. And so, yes, we do have services there. Quite often, some of the services we provide are funded by the county government. But because, Jay, as you pointed out, Allegheny County has a smaller population and a lower tax base, their ability to fund social services at the same level as, for example, Erie County is simply diminished.
Mm.
So we do the best we can, but there continues to be need that we have a challenge facing. It's one of the frustrations of this work is we talked about food pantries. We've got 9. I wish we had 19.
Hmm.
You know, we've got 8 district offices. I wish we had, you know, double that because the need certainly exists, but there's just not enough funding and not enough resources to be everywhere where there's need.
And transportation is an issue, of course, in our rural counties. I'm glad you got to mention Pat Fogarty. She continues to inspire the work we do in our rural communities.
Nice.
But when I think of Allegheny County, I think of an important partnership we have with the county on multisystemic therapy, where our social workers, our clinicians, actually go into the homes to help families with children who've been identified by CPS or the schools or even the courts. And this program is, you know, could be the last step before going into the juvenile justice system. And I'm proud to say our clinicians have helped those families and helped those children so that that doesn't happen.
So they've been able to stave off a next step that could be even more severe, more
exactly,
have more of an impact. That's great to hear. I mean, I guess that's part of the work then when you're in the outlying counties is you've got to go to where the people are more.
Yeah. We have a number of programs. We provide MST for short in Erie County as well and in Niagara County. It's a home-based therapy. It's 3 to 4 days a week, an hour a meeting, essentially empowering the parents, the guardians, with the skills they need to help bring their children back to safety, stability, hope. Right. And it's a very highly structured, evidence-based program. Catholic Charities is the only agency in Western New York who provides this therapy. And I can tell you that in Erie County, they're very, very excited about it because it works.
Okay.
You know, keeping a kid out of the juvenile justice system is obviously good for the kid. And it's good for society because it's a lot better for everybody if a kid's on the straight and narrow and finishes school and goes off and gets a job or goes to higher education than ending up in trouble with the law and, you know, who knows what.
Not to put more on your plate, but is this a program that you could see expanding?
Absolutely. I mean, and on any given day, we are looking for MST therapists because it's challenging work. It requires a professional credential, and it's a high burnout job. So I hope some of our therapists are listening. We love you. We appreciate you. We need like 5 more. We've got open positions all the time, and there are kiddos who are waiting for service, and we don't have enough therapists to serve them. Isn't that frustrating?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually saw, I think I saw Molly's eyes almost pop out of her head there. Now, she's the one that's making, you know, trying to make sure that these positions are filled and such, right?
Yes. And it's important that we have relationship in higher ed so that we can create that pipeline for social work graduates to come and work for our agency and learn and be mentored by clinicians with longer tenure. So it's a high priority for me in order to provide support for this need in the community. We have to have social workers supporting us.
And again, the social worker concept, and back to impressions, is it is that a underappreciated profession from two providers, two people.
Not
who
by us.
I was just going to say, though, but I'm asking you to step outside that role and see what do other people say about it.
You know, my experience of the social workers I've worked with is they're a special breed of people. You know, they're in this because they want to be in the helping profession. Mm-hmm. And I think about, there's a lot of helping professions, right? The medical profession, the teaching profession, in particular, where, you know, let's face it, the salaries might not be as high as something that's more economically driven. But you get to be hands-on right in front of people and you get to help. Mm-hmm. And that characterizes most of the people that we employ at Catholic Charities, even in the finance department, right? I mean, anyone working in our finance department is doing bookkeeping. Mm. They could work for a financial institution and be paid more, but they recognize that what they're doing is helping to serve people. And so even though they're not handing out a bag of food or doing therapy, what they're doing helps us to do that, right? And that's true up and down the entire organization. It really is a beautiful thing.
Today, we're talking with Catholic Charities of Western New York. The president and CEO is Deacon Steve Schumer. Marianne Oliver is chief operating officer. I was thinking about one thing, and I'm wondering about when you were talking about outreach and people finding your services. I'm wondering what people think of the, for lack of a better term, the Catholic Charities brand. You know, I mean, I can remember Catholic Charities from when I was a little guy, way back. So it's always been around. Does that seem to offer or help people come in? Does it give them a little boost maybe to come into a place that has a familiar name?
You know, I think so, because we've been part of the community. We celebrated our 100-year anniversary just last year. So we've been part of the community, and whatever faith tradition people are, there's been a church on the corner everywhere in Western New York, right? So again, I'm Catholic clergy, so I'm very proud of the Catholic heritage of the work that we do, and we like to say that we serve people not because they're Catholic, but because we're Catholic, and we serve everybody. The word Catholic with a small c means universal, and so we're a very important part of Western New York, and we're very proud of that heritage. Yeah.
Molly and Oliver, we want to make sure that we talk about a couple other things that I know you wanted to get into a little bit about when it comes to work in schools, right? And this is another key part of the...
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Yeah. Our in-school social work program, we call it ISWIP, is a program that has great growth potential because there's just so much need in the schools to support our students and our teachers and our families. So the program I just mentioned with social work provides some training, some curriculum to address emotional factors, help improve their family dynamics. There are actually 10 character development areas as part of that program. But we also have another program called Closing the Gap that helps improve the academic barriers to success, like food insecurity and social services. So we have Closing the Gap clinicians in the schools to help the schools navigate some of the challenges the family has. And then one more program is called the Foster Grandparents Program. That's a federally supported program through AmeriCorps seniors. And that not only provides a meaningful volunteer opportunity for those 55 and over, but it provides one-on-one mentoring in the classroom, hospitals, community centers, so that the kiddos in our programs have a role model, somebody who, like a grandparent figure, that can help them in the classroom and academically.
Is the are there volunteering opportunities within Catholic Charities? I know we talked about it when it came to food pantries.
Yes, thank you. We definitely need more volunteers in the foster grandparents program. So if there's
anybody over the age of 55,
over 55, and there are some income guidelines for that program, as well as we need a commitment and that they're fit to do the job and work in the schools, because working with children it can be a little demanding. But, if they fit those qualifications, we'd love to talk to them.
Okay. What about across the board then? I mean, what else is there beyond that? I mean,
Those are the big places. Yeah. The foster grandparents and food pantries. A lot of folks who work or go to school during the day, it's difficult to find volunteer opportunities because we're pretty much most of our services are being done during the business day.
Sure.
You know, we do have professional people who provide services evenings and weekends, but those really don't mesh with volunteers so much.
Okay. We have the thrift stores too. We have the Ladies of Charity on Broadway. As well as a pantry and thrift store in Wellsville that rely on volunteers, too.
And our annual appeal is almost all run by volunteers.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
Volunteers all across the diocese.
Now, you actually stressed that before we started. You said, you know, I've got enough as president and CEO dealing with 57 different agencies inside Catholic Charities that you really aren't necessarily involved in the fundraising part of this.
Other than me going around giving homilies for Catholic Charities.
Which you did, five yesterday?
Five masses at Queen of Heaven yesterday. It was lovely. I think this weekend I'm going to be at the Basilica. Fair warning for the folks at the Basilica.
Right.
The appeal is all volunteer run. And, you know, back in the day, I remember going with my father door to door on Palm Sunday collecting, you know, with a stack of envelopes. You know, now it's mostly done by telephone and by direct mail. But we still have volunteers in all the parishes setting up a table at the back of church and continuing to call people on the telephone. Last week, we had about 40 people in the office and spread throughout Western New York making phone calls for Hope Day. And I'm pleased to say that we had a record-breaking Hope Day. We raised over $500,000 towards the appeal. And right now, we're at about 50% of our goal. The appeal runs through the end of June, so we're about halfway there, which is really, really important.
Well, how does that rate, though? How does that, in terms of pace, how does that kind of fit historically?
We're about on pace with where we were in the last 5 years, if you average things. And again, over the last 5 years, you had pandemic in there and, you know, a decreasing Catholic population. But to be about halfway right about now is a very encouraging landmark. This year, the goal is a little lower than last year. The goal is $8.5 million. I wish we could raise a lot more because certainly we need it. But we're encouraged. As I mentioned, we're about halfway there right now, so it's good news.
What works? What works in your? I mean, you did the homilies and what do you sense reverberates with people? What resonates with them when you're talking about what you do?
We always emphasize explaining to people how we can help you or somebody you know. That's why we exist. You know, primarily we're here to serve. And so if we can communicate to the community that we're here to provide service and that we can help people, then you know what? It's up to the Holy Spirit to move someone's heart to want to support us either with, donations or with volunteer hours. So the most important thing that we try to get out is we're here to help. Call us if you need some sort of help. Come to our website. Look for our services. If we can't help you directly, we know who can, and we can point you in the right direction.
Molly, how about for you? You came over to Catholic Charities 2 years ago. How do you rate the experience? How do you describe your time with it? Because we were talking before, you've had some work. I know you're at the university level for a while. You did other nonprofit. What are you seeing inside this Catholic Charities of Western New York?
I love it. I've never looked back. I mean, I've spent 30 years working in nonprofit in this community, specifically in leadership development and, the underserved. And this is all of that. I apply everything I've ever learned to this job. But, it's really the people that make it so special, you know, that people could probably work anywhere else and maybe even for a lot more money, but they're here to do the right thing every day. And that, you know, gets me out of bed every morning.
Right.
So I want to do my best to give them what they need to be successful in the roles. And I think I am. I think people are enjoying their role. I have a really solid team of operations leaders who, we work together, you know, go in the boardroom, solve problems, figure out what we're going to do about this or that. And, I think the best is yet to come for us. So
right.
I'm excited to be part of it.
You know, before we mentioned the idea of a label or a brand when it comes to Catholic Charities, and I would rate it as being strong overall here in Western New York. At the same time, I'm always wondering, are there things that, or misjudgments that people make about Catholic Charities and about the the services that you provide,
sure,
that you'd want to make sure that they understand.
Yeah, yeah. I think because we're Catholic Charities, I've heard people wonder, well, do you just serve Catholics? You know, the sign on the wall would seem to indicate that we're just here for Catholics. Mm-hmm. And as I just explained, right, no, we serve everybody. In fact, we don't ask. You know, when a person comes, we don't ask. And the same is true of our employee base. You know, we don't ask a person's faith tradition. We have people from all walks of life serving as employees and volunteers, as well as our clients. So I think that's an important mm-hmm. thing to remind people, you know. So thank you for the opportunity to mention that.
Yeah, I guess I could just add that I don't think people realize that this is really the underpinning of this community and how essential it is. And without it, where people would go coming in as somebody newer, I had no idea how many lives we were touching in this program. And I grew up Catholic and donated to Catholic Charities, but just how many people we're impacting through our programs is just astounding.
And what about, you mentioned, give us a call.
Absolutely.
If somebody needs Catholic Charities, somebody knows somebody who needs Catholic Charities, what should they do?
Call us. Our phone number is area code 716-218-1400, 716-218-1400. Call us if you need help. Call us if you want to donate. We've got a website as well. It's ccwny.org. Think Catholic Charities, Western New York.org. You can also just Google Catholic Charities, and Google's pretty smart now. It knows where you are. It pops up and says, oh, you want the one in Buffalo. You know, there's a Catholic Charities agency in almost every diocese across the country. Here in New York, there are 8 dioceses across the country. I get to interact with my colleagues across the state, as well as nationally. There are Catholic Charities everywhere.
And, of course, Catholic Charities of Western New York. Deacon Steve Schumer is the president and CEO. Thanks for being with us. And Marian Oliver, chief operating officer, thank you also for joining us as well.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks for having us, Jay.
This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.